This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. It's National Poetry Month, and poetry is thriving. One indication of the health and well-being of poetry, the number of new books of poetry being published. This afternoon, our guest is Elise Passion. She's one of the editors of a new anthology of poetry that features biographical sketches of poets, a critical essay about each poet's work, and three compact discs with the poets reading their poetry. The anthology is titled Poetry Speaks. Who's included in the book? More than 40 poets here, including Alfred Lord Tennyson, W.B. Yeats, Carl Sandburg, Edna St. Vincent Millay, T.S. Eliot, Ezra Pound, Gertrude Stein, William Carlos Williams, Gwendolyn Brooks, Elizabeth Bishop, Langston Hughes. The compact discs are narrated by Charles Osgood. Elise Passion, our guest, teaches in the writing program at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. She was executive director of the Poetry Society of America from 1988 to 2001. She's the co-founder of Poetry in Motion. This is a program you may have heard about or seen. It's a nationwide program that places poetry posters in subways and on buses. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments about poets and poetry this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers to join the discussion. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Elise Passion, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Celeste. It's nice being on it.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk with you. This is a terrific project. What was the inspiration for Poetry Speaks?
The inspiration occurred actually at Sourcebooks, which is the publisher of Poetry Speaks. Sourcebooks is a Naperville, Illinois-based publishing house, and the publisher of Sourcebooks, Dominique Rocca, is a very passionate fan of poetry. She began several years ago a series called Media Fusion Books, where she combined the print and the audio for a sports book, for a news book. We Interrupt This Broadcast, narrated by Bill Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always her dream to do a similar book based on poetry. And several years ago, Sourcebooks found me and asked if I'd be interested in serving as the book editor. And I, as you mentioned, was serving then as the executive director of the Poetry Society of America. And poetry is also my passion and my lifelong commitment and my lifelong work. And I said that I would love to serve as the book editor. And then we brought on Rebecca Preston Mosby, who served as the audio editor. On top of that, we asked three advisory editors to help out. Rita Dove, former poet laureate, Robert Pinsky, also former poet laureate, and Dana Gioia, poet and critic. And together, we're all very proud of the book that we put together.
Yeah. Well, it's so good to hear Rebecca Preston Mosby's name again, because, you know, many of us will remember her from her work on National Public Radio.
Yes, absolutely. She was a big force on the scene, and it has been wonderful working with her on this project. She's a great lover of the spoken word and expert in terms of, you know, digging out these archival materials and finding the various recordings that we used in Poetry Speaks.
Yeah. That's a big project. Tell us something about the process of putting it all together.
Well, as I said, Rebecca and I got on board, and our first goal was to figure out who to include in the book and on the CDs. We decided that all of the poets would be deceased so that we could examine each poet's life's work in its entirety. And what we did was we started to find out what were the earliest recordings we could find. And Rebecca, you know, found this Robert Browning recording, which was a great coup, as well as Alfred Lord Tennyson and Walt Whitman. And then with our 20th century poets, it was really a question of narrowing those choices down. We began with a list of 60 poets, and all five editors, the two editors, co-editors, Rebecca and myself, and the three advisory editors, we kept voting. And we kept trying to narrow the list down to 40 poets. And we finally got it down to, I think, 41 poets, sadly, Gwendolyn Brooks passed away as the book was coming, you know, as we were wrapping it all up. And, of course, we wanted to include Gwendolyn in the book itself, so we did. And we now have 42 poets, as we mentioned. After that, after choosing the poets, we then went searching for the audio recordings. So it was Rebecca's job to go and go to libraries, listen to the audios, hear what were the best recordings. My job was to choose the poems, so that we chose the poems based on the audio recordings, but we also added additional poems. So there were roughly 5 poems in the book per poet. I also traveled around the country to various archival libraries, such as the Houghton Library at Harvard and Beinecke at Yale. And we also have archival material in the book, such as manuscript drafts and letters and photographs. And we then asked poets to write essays on the featured poets in the book. So because of my work at the Poetry Society, I had a sense of who was interested in whom. Our most wonderful, delightful thing that occurred was that I faxed my former professor, Seamus Heaney, a letter very early on saying, could he please write an essay on William Butler Yeats? And 3 days later, he faxed me his essay, saying I'd caught him on a good day, and here was an essay. So that was a wonderful way to get everything rolling.
Yeah, that was a really interesting part of the book very early on. I mean, there's so much here. Last night I spent a couple of hours poring over the book and listening to the CDs and whatnot, and it was great to hear Yeats read.
Yes.
And then also to get the insight from Seamus Heaney, mm-hmm. what he hears, what he sees in Yeats' work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that Yeats, the Irish poet, thought of poetry. Now you can correct me if I'm not putting this correctly, but as a form of song, as a chant.
Well,
am
what
I close?
He talks about, and maybe we'll listen to the Yeats recording. He talks. He felt very strongly that when he reads his poems aloud, they should be read as poetry and not as prose. And Yeats was a notorious reviser. He maybe would a poem would be revised over 20 times or 30 times. Poems that he published in the 1890s would then get revised in 1925 when he pulled together his collected poems. So he was constantly revising. He often began his poems as a prose draft, so it would occur to him as a dream or just a prose fragment. And then he would struggle to get that poem into verse. And he says that in his introduction, which I think is just so wonderful to hear. And he felt very strongly when he wrote his poems, he would actually, I think this is also maybe what you're talking about, he would recite the poem aloud as he was writing them. I think here's a quote that Seamus has in his essay. I sometimes compare myself with the mad old slum women I hear denouncing and remembering. How dare you, I heard one say of some imaginary suitor, and you without health or home. If I spoke my thoughts aloud, they might be as angry and as wild. It was a long time before I had made a language to my liking, et cetera, et cetera. And he talks about how important it is that he, can hear the poem. It's a verbal utterance. It's mm-hmm. an oral utterance.
Mm-hmm. Heaney says, once you hear the heightened voice and the sustained syntax, the held line and the pointed rhyme, you understand that for him the poem was first and foremost a bodying forth of sound.
That's exactly right, yes.
Well, what do you say we listen to Yeats read?
I think that would be wonderful.
Okay. This is The Lake Isle of Innisfree.
Are you going to play the introduction first?
I think we'll skip the introduction.
Go straight to the poem.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay.
I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honey bee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the vales of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow. and evening full of linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core.
Mm. Written in 1890, the Lake Isle of Innisfree. What a longing sound.
A longing.
Yeah, a longing, I think.
It's very hypnotic, and I think once you hear the recordings on Poetry Speaks, it's hard to read the poems again without hearing the poets' voices in your own head. I actually went to the Lake Isle of Innisfree, and after I'd heard Yeats' recording, this is, you know, maybe 10 years ago, and it just resonated through the landscape. His voice.
Nine bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee. What's the difference between reading a poem on the page and hearing it recited?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, maybe to even be more specific, is and hearing the poem recited by the poet.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear the poet reading the poem in his or her own voice, I think it really offers you an aperture into the poet's psyche and into his or her sensibility. You see where the emphasis lies. You see where the breath goes. You see where the pauses are. And I think that it's so much more illuminating to be able to hear it directly from the author. You know, in this day and age, in the last 10 years, there's been a renaissance of poetry readings throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of us have had the wonderful opportunity to attend these and to hear our living poets read aloud. And it's such a, you know, it's such a treasure. I realize now, you know, having put together this book, because I spent, you know, 13 years at the PSA putting together these readings, and I realize now in retrospect that you really hear the words directly from the poet, and you really can understand, you know, how to read the poem and how the poem should be absorbed by the listener. So I think that it adds a whole new dimension. You know, obviously many of us read poems and study them in school, but if you can hear the author reading the poem in his or her own voice, it brings you back to the whole oral tradition of poetry and the whole importance of you know, performing poetry and communicating poetry from one person to another person.
Yeah. One of the things that was a great joy for me was hearing William Carlos Williams read on one of the discs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, wow, I could really see this man in his other life as a doctor, as a physician.
Mm-hmm.
He had that sound, and I think you're exactly right that you do get sort of a glimpse into what that person is like by hearing their voice interpret their poetry.
Exactly.
And I hope that we will be able to hear William Carlos Williams read a little bit later in this portion of the program. But before we do that, let's go and talk about something that you just hit upon, and that is that at the end of the 20th century and here at the beginning of the 21st century, we have a big boom in poetry readings and recitals. And that was also the case at the end of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what, do you have any insight into what might be at work today in terms of why we're interested in poetry readings, getting together and hearing people read poetry?
Well, you know, having lived in New York for 10 years, in New York City itself, there would be maybe, I mean, even now I think there are at least 25 poetry events a night that you could attend, you know, between the cafes and bars and nonprofit organizations and colleges and universities. You know, there are poetry readings everywhere going. I mean, that might even be a low figure. You know, on the one hand, it's a wonderful form of, you know, I think that in our very busy lives, oftentimes it's a way to receive a quick inculcation of culture. You know, that you can go and instead of taking the time to sit down and read a book, you can actually go and hear the poet read a book, you know, read from his or her book or from his or her poems for 1 hour and be instilled and be inspired by those poems and by the author's voice. Mm. And I think also, you know, from a very pragmatic level, their Incredo is a very inexpensive way to seek entertainment, in that, you know, poetry readings often are for free. Poetry readings may be, you know, at most $8, so it's something, you know, or even less than the price of a movie ticket, so that it's something that is easily accessible, something that's affordable, and something also that, you know, will bring you in touch with the author himself or herself. Mm-hmm. As you were saying, in the 19th century, the poets, the reason we have these recordings is that poets such as Tennyson and Browning were considered, you know, they were sort of pop figures in a way. I mean, they were very, very popular in those days. They were comparable to, you know, what maybe our rock stars would be nowadays. So that when Thomas Edison invented his phonograph, his first idea was to record these poets. So I'm sort of going off in different directions, but I hope I'm answering your question.
Yeah. You know, it also strikes me that poetry is like painting in a sense. In other words, when you go to the Art Institute, you can't see every painting, but maybe you go and you look at a couple. Mm-hmm. And with poetry readings, it's an opportunity to experience just a couple of poems and let them sink in, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a very good way of putting it, I think.
Yeah, and that brings me to just mention a couple of things that I know that the Art Institute of Chicago has got a Writers in Art program, and you're probably involved in this. And May 3rd, Simon Ortiz is going to be there and reading.
Yes.
And then on the 23rd of May, Edward Hirsch.
Exactly. And last night, Seamus Heaney read at Fullerton Hall. So he was part of that series as well.
Very good. And then here in our community in Champaign, Poetry Alive, the grand finale to the National Poetry Month celebration at the Champaign Public Library. The high-energy performing group Poetry Alive will be here, bringing poetry alive like you've never seen or heard it before. And that event is free. And if you're interested in that, call the public library. The tickets to that event are free. That event is Tuesday, April 30th. Call the library to get more information on that. Our topic this afternoon, poetry. Our guest is Elise Passion. She was executive director of the PSA, the Poetry Society of America, from 1988 to 2001. She is one of the editors of the new anthology Poetry Speaks. She is a teacher in the writing program at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, I welcome your participation in the discussion this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I thought we'd listen to a couple of Illinois poets who are in the collection. You mentioned one of these poets earlier, Gwendolyn Brooks. Also, Carl Sandburg is here. These are two well-known Illinois poets and much-loved poets. One of the things that strikes me about these two poets, although they are very different, you can hear the rhythms of Illinois in their poetry, rural and urban. What do you think about that, Elise?
Well, I think that, you know, our state has produced some amazing poetic voices, and I don't know if you've encountered, there has been an anthology edited by G.E. Murray and Kevin Stein called Illinois Voices. And that, I know I shouldn't be talking about other poetry anthologies, but anyway, it draws together all of the poets from Illinois and, of course, includes Carl Sandburg and Gwendolyn Brooks. And it's really amazing to leaf through those pages and see all of the poets who at some point have lived in Illinois or were born in Illinois and I think we should be very proud of our state.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you say we listen to Carl Sandburg? There are three poems, or two poems in a, and a portion, an excerpt of another poem on one of the CDs in Poetry Speaks, the CD collection in this anthology. And what I would like to do is play Grass and Cool Tombs, and both of these poems have to do very much with the Civil War. Would you like to say something about them, Elise, before we hear them?
I think you've done a wonderful introduction for them.
Okay. Well, let's hear Cool Grass. Grass, excuse me, first, and then we'll hear Cool Tombs. Here's Grass.
Pile the bodies high at Austerlitz and Waterloo. Shovel them under and let me work. I am the grass. I cover all. And pile them high at Gettysburg. And pile them high at Ypres, Verdun, Stalingrad. Shovel them under and let me work. 2 years, 10 years, and passengers ask the conductor, what place is this? Where are we now? I am the grass. Let me work.
Grass, Carl Sandburg reading.
When Abraham Lincoln...
Whoops. Sometimes that happens, you know, the CD player will skip ahead and you're not quite ready for it. But anyway, these things happen on live radio. We're going to hear next Cool Tombs. But this poem, Grass, I'm sorry for the interruption and having it go to Cool Tombs immediately, because it's such a powerful poem about war. I don't know if we want to say anything more about that. Next is Cool Tombs. And
what's interesting also about this poem is that it's a persona poem, so it's actually spoken by the grass.
Right.
That's covering these graves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting twist.
I am the grass. Okay, let's hear Cool Tombs.
When Abraham Lincoln was shoveled into the tombs, he forgot the copperheads and the assassin in the dust, in the cool tombs. And Ulysses Grant lost all thought of con men and Wall Street. Cash and collateral turned ashes in the dust, in the cool tombs. Pocahontas' body, lovely as a poplar, sweet as a red haw in November or a pawpaw in May. Did she wonder, does she remember, in the dust, in the cool? Take any street full of people buying clothes and groceries, cheering a hero or throwing confetti and blowing tin horns. Tell me if the lovers are losers. Tell me if any get more than the lovers. In the dust, in the cool tombs.
Carl Sandburg, Cool Tombs. Both poems written in 1918.
And as you can hear, you know, he was a very charismatic reader, and he would command large audiences when he would give readings, and oftentimes he used a guitar, and sort of, as you can hear in the way he speaks, he sort of sings the poems. He appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show, for instance, and so I know that many of our listeners, I'm sure, are very well aware of Carl Sandburg's great reputation.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's turn now to Gwendolyn Brooks. She was the first African-American poet to win the Pulitzer Prize for poetry. Something else I learned from Poetry Speaks, she took her books to African-American publishers. And she was someone who was very well known for her public readings, I suppose a little bit like Sandburg in that respect. Although, apparently she did readings because her books could be hard to find.
Yes. She felt very adamant that her publishers be African American. She was an amazing, I don't know, did you ever meet Gwendolyn Brooks?
I did.
She was just an amazing life force. I met her back in, I think, 89 or 1990 when she won the Frost Medal, and then she served on the PSA board. Such a generous soul, so charismatic, performed many readings for us, including several Poetry in Motion events. And she really was such a presence when she got up to read, and you'll hear it. These recordings, interestingly enough, are earlier than, obviously, when we knew her.
Right.
So these were done in if we play the song in the front yard, that was in 1961. We Real Cool was 1969. And you'll hear the difference that between those years, just 8 years, by the time she recites We Real Cool, you start hearing that syncopated beat that she was so well known for, and her oracular style really starts flowering forth. And it was, still, 69, that was 30 years earlier than the time, when I would listen to her read her poems.
Yeah. One of the things that comes through in these poems, even though they're relatively early, is when I met her, she was at a library event that was designed especially for children.
Yes.
And she just had an amazing rapport with kids.
And she felt very strongly about children's education and children learning about poetry. She set up various prizes in Illinois for young poets. And the last time she read for us was at the Steppenwolf Theater. And we had several, I think several schools, classes of children were there, and the kids were just lined up around the auditorium to meet her and have her sign their books. So she really was and continues to be such a great inspiration.
Okay. So should we hear a song in the front yard?
That would be great.
Okay.
I hope you'll play We Real Cool, too.
Oh, we have to hear that.
We have to hear that.
Right. Okay. Here's a song in the front yard.
A song in the front yard. I've stayed in the front yard all my life. I want to peek at the back, where it's rough and untended and hungry weed grows. A girl gets sick of a rose. I want to go in the backyard now and maybe down the alley to where the charity children play. I want a good time today. They do some wonderful things. They have some wonderful fun. My mother sneers, but I say it's fine how they don't have to go in at 8:45. My mother, she tells me that Johnny May will grow up to be a bad woman, that George will be taken to jail soon or late on account of last winter he sold our back gate. But I say it's fine, honest I do, and I'd like to be a bad woman too, and wear the brave stockings of night black lace and strut down the streets with paint on my face.
That's fabulous. A song in the front yard. And I'm noting here in the essay that Sonia Sanchez wrote on Gwendolyn Brooks, she asks, I never have to ask, where are the flowers, son? Where are the mothers, fathers? Where are the old marrieds? Where are the children? I see them in her poems that breathe women in a blaze of upsweeps and backyards and ballads, in her children dancing between urine and violets, in her singing to us between the sleeping and the waking. That is so poetical.
I know. Sonia has been so wonderful. She, we had to ask her at the very last minute to write the tribute. And she adopted it from something that she had written, I think, for Time Magazine or Newsweek, sorry. And she has been actually participating. We've been doing several Poetry Speaks events across the country, and she took place in one here in Chicago and one last week at the Guggenheim in New York City. And when she pays tribute to Sonia and she, talks, when she pays tribute to Gwendolyn Brooks and talks about her, it is like a poem, a declaration that she recites, what a great inspiration she was. And she talked about actually as a young poet coming to Chicago and sort of sitting at Gwendolyn Brooks' feet and the way that Gwendolyn encouraged younger poets.
I think Gwendolyn, she had... she would sponsor poetry readings, and she put up the prize money.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Terrific lady.
And on my board, you know, we had all these incredibly wealthy businessmen and businesswomen, but it was always Gwendolyn Brooks who was the most generous in terms of what she gave to us.
Well, let's hear now We Real Cool. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think she offers us a little bit of an introduction this poem.
This one is a distillation of my interest in some pool players that I saw in a pool room near my home during school hours. And you might have asked, why aren't these young men in school? And I asked the same question and tried to distill their own feelings for my use. We real cool, the pool players, seven at the Golden Shovel. We real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon.
We real cool, the pool players, seven at the Golden Shovel.
It's interesting because that was a recording, as I mentioned, from 1969, and she would read that poem at various readings, and she kept that same syncopated beat and same intonation. So that style, although the voice is younger, was very much, you know, Gwendolyn Brooks to the very end.
Hmm. We mentioned earlier William Carlos Williams, and we're going to have to wrap up pretty soon. As I mentioned earlier, I really, when I saw he was included in Poetry Speaks, I was very excited because I really enjoy his work. And I had no idea what he would sound like. And as I mentioned, I think that I, after hearing him, I thought, yeah, that's the voice of a physician.
Well, an interesting anecdote was that as I was gathering this archival material, I was at the Beinecke at Yale, and there are many Williams papers at Yale, and I discovered these handwritten notes that Williams made on his prescription pad about Ezra Pound. So I assume he was preparing to give a talk about Ezra Pound. And so in the book, Poetry Speaks, you'll see these prescription pad with William C. Williams, M.D., and then several scrawled notations concerning the poet Ezra Pound.
Very interesting. Well, we don't have a lot of time left, so what I would suggest is Queen Anne's Lace, a poem written in 1921. And this reminded me of a Shakespearean sonnet, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the title of it now, but it is about my love is, her lips are not like roses.
Yes.
Her breast is not, you know, lily white.
I wish I could quote it right now.
She's
Sorry.
My love is a flesh and blood woman.
Yes, yes. And this is, I think he is playing off that very well-known Shakespearean sonnet.
Okay. Queen Anne's Lace, William Carlos Williams.
Queen Anne's Lace. Her body is not so white as anemone petals, nor so smooth, nor so remote a thing. It is a field of the wild carrot taking the field by force. The grass does not raise above it. Here is no question of whiteness, white as can be, with a purple mole at the center of each flower. Each flower is a hand's span of her whiteness. Wherever her hand has lain, there is a tiny purple blemish. Each part is a blossom under his touch, to which the fibers of her being stem one by one, each to its end, until the whole field is a white desire, empty, a single stem, a cluster, flower by flower, a pious wish to whiteness gone over, or nothing.
Queen Anne's Lace, William Carlos Williams.
I remember the beginning of the Shakespeare. My mistress's eyes are nothing like the sun. If breasts be white, then her breasts be done,
mm-hmm.
I think.
That's right. That's it, exactly. It's a lovely poem. And actually, when I got married, I thought of having it read at the wedding. It would be kind of refreshing from all the stuff that goes along with weddings and our romantic ideas.
Yes.
And, you know, before
low expectations.
Yeah. Before we go, I also want to remark that there are some other very engaging performances here from Edna St. Vincent Millay and Dorothy Parker. They're two level-headed women, too, who are sharp wits. And Millay, there's a poem in here that she reads, "I shall forget you presently, my dear," which is just terrific. So I will leave it. We'll have to leave it there, I think, for in hopefully we've inspired listeners to go and check this out and listen to these poets read their work. Elise, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Elise Passion has been our guest here on The Afternoon Magazine. And if you're interested, look for the book Poetry Speaks. There are more than 40 poets in the book, including Alfred Lord Tennyson, W.B. Yeats, Carl Sandburg, Edna St. Vincent Millay, T.S. Eliot, Ezra Pound, Gertrude Stein, William Carlos Williams, Gwendolyn Brooks, Dorothy Parker, Sylvia Plath, and more. And the compact discs are narrated by Charles Osgood. So before each poet reads from his or her work, you get a little narration from Charles Osgood, which is also very nice.